Welcome back, beloved listeners, to another episode of Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery. I'm Kathy Moser, your hostess of the Mostest, and we are bringing you this show on City of Angels Recovery Radio, where there are shows every single day of the week to help you with your recovery process. In this show, we're exploring how does our creativity affect our recovery, and how does our recovery affect our creativity. This week, I had the pleasure to interview Elliot Calloway, who is a 2014 Sunlight of the Spirit Award winner. That's an award given by ASCAP, the American Society of Composers and Publishers. He's also a student at the University of Alabama in their collegiate recovery community. He's a composition major, and it was a pleasure to talk to him. You're going to get to hear a little bit of his music and a little bit of his journey. So let's go to my interview with Elliot Calloway.
So you won the ASCAP Foundation Sunlight of the Spirit Award, and that's an award that's given every year to someone to a student who's exemplary in both recovery and in music. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened, about what the song was, what led to you writing that song?
Yeah, sure. So the way I found out about the award, actually, it was kind of coming towards the end of the semester. This would have been last spring, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And so we have, at the University of Alabama, I'm a member of the collegiate recovery community. And so We've got like a building on campus that is just kind of where, students get to hang out and students that are in recovery, I should say. And we've got about like 25 students in the center right now. And anyway, it's kind of this whole deal. And I just kind of, was done with class for the day or something. And I remember I went up there to hang out with our director, Greg. And he was like, hey, I got this email about this scholarship or this award opportunity. And I was like, okay, let's hear about it, And he was like, well, it involves music. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And he was like, yeah, so for music students, they can turn in a song. And then, I think I had to write like a little bit about myself or whatever. And the prize was $5,000, and you got to go up to New York and all this stuff. They actually didn't specify that you got to go up to New York. There was just the cash prize thing. And I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm a composition student at Alabama, and I was like, that's right up my alley. And so it was probably like late April, and I think the tune was due like 2 months after that or something, maybe like a month after that. I can't really remember. And I went home after, school ended and was just kind of hanging out, not really doing much. I was kind of in my routine of when I go back home, which is basically just hanging out with my family and playing music all day back in Birmingham, Alabama. And I just kind of woke up one morning and was doing my typical morning practice routine and started kind of dealing with something, and a tune came out of it. And about 2 weeks later, I went back to Tuscaloosa and wrote the lyrics to it and then recorded it with a buddy of mine down here at school, and that was it. Turned it in, and didn't think much about it for 2 months probably, and then like around August I got a call and they let me know, and I was speechless. It was wild.
Yeah, well, congratulations, that's super. And can you tell me what the song is called?
So the title of the song is Awake.
Uh-huh.
And it was really like completely different from anything that I ever have written or done. Like, I usually play in a band with people, and I'm very much I like jazz and funk and stuff like that. It's typically my cup of tea. And but I always have like a soft spot for acoustic guitar, and there's something a little bit more like intimate about just one person, acoustic guitar and singing. And this song happened to be more of like a singer-songwriter kind of thing, which was very, mm-hmm. It was not something that I had really ever done before. I really enjoyed it, and I since then have kind of stuck around in that vein when it comes to, when I'm not playing with other people, I've definitely started to put more focus on that since, since all this happened.
Right. Right. So yeah. How was it? Had you been to New York City before?
Yeah, I went when I was like 13 years old, and I remember I went with like my family, and it was a disaster. I was like one of five kids, and I just remember my dad the whole time being like, God, this is, he was like, this is rough. I think they didn't really think it through for trying to keep up with five kids all under the age of like 16 in New York City. It was, and I remember it was spring break, and it was snowing, and it was windy, and just freezing, and everyone was just, I mean, you know, we had a good time, but I think my dad was like, we're never doing that again. So it had been 10 years, but.
Uh-huh. And so what was that like for you to be up there and get to meet Paul Williams and be part of the ASCAP Awards?
It was just crazy. I think, like, being up at the, you know, the Jazz Lincoln Center, just that whole area, it's unbelievable because that's, you know, you're looking up at a wall of, you know, these names of people that have kind of been solidified over there on their the little, wherever we had the little reception or whatever. And you've got like Coltrane and Cannonball Adderley and Miles Davis and Sonny Rollins, all these guys who were just like, you know, these are my all time favorite musicians ever. And just getting to kind of like hang out back in the little back rooms of that area was unbelievable. And meeting Paul was, you know, I mean, what's there to say? He's like probably one of the nicest people I've ever met, you know, and it's just the stuff that he had to share about, you know, recovery and about music, he was just so nice. That's just unbelievable that somebody who is in a position that he's in, you know, can practice humility like that. And to take the time out to, you know, just like hang out for a little bit and do the interview and everything was really, really cool. And I think it was really funny because the guy who flew us up there, or the guy who for Recovery Campus Magazine, Lee Hurley, was like, you got to watch this documentary before you go up there. And I hadn't, like, you know, I'm not from the generation that remembers Paul Williams at all. You know, I'm 24 years old. So.
Right.
I'm watching this documentary, and this guy, my dad, you know, is freaking out about this. He's like, this guy was everything in the 70s. And I'm just like, okay, you know, I'll take your word for it. And, you know, like, I mean, I've heard of Rainbow Connection, which was, you know, everyone's heard that song. And I knew he was huge, but I guess I didn't realize just how big. And I'm watching this documentary, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable, you know. And
what's the name of that documentary?
You know, I think it was called Still Alive. So it's a great documentary. I mean, really, really interesting stuff. And I thought it was just funny because I'm like looking at, you know, I watched the documentary like a couple weeks before I go up there, and there's like his assistant is like this real like neurotic, like you can tell she's like having to like run around and do all this stuff constantly, and she's just like very like always on her toes. And I like saw the assistant on the documentary, and then when we got up there, I see this woman running around like trying to get everything straight. And I'm like, where have I seen her before? And she like takes me and is like, come on, you have to come back here with me. And I was like, oh, that's the lady from the documentary that was stressing everyone out. That's great. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, he was just the nicest guy. I mean, it was cool. You know, he like gave me his phone number and was like, yeah, call me whenever. So that was, you know, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Right, right. Well, that's awesome. So that's fantastic. I got to meet him a couple of weeks after that at this Karen Foundation thing. And, yeah, it was totally my experience also. He's completely humble, very funny, and just figuring out how to use his powers for good, you know.
Yeah, success. Definitely.
So I had a couple of questions for you about drugs and alcohol, your sobriety, and music. One question I had was, so you've been clean and sober about 2 years at this point, a little bit more than 2 years. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
How long have you been writing music, and were drugs and alcohol at any part a part of your musical experience?
I've probably been like seriously writing music only for, I mean, really seriously, probably only, I wouldn't even say, maybe 2 or 3 years. And that just means that like on a daily basis, putting work into it. Because, you know, I would come up with something and kind of pitch it to a band back in the day, and we would maybe work it out. But to where it's like a part of my daily life, I'd probably say 2 or 3 years. And for me, I mean, for me, like early on, I mean, playing music, drugs and alcohol were a direct, that was kind of it for me. Because, I mean, I grew up in the place where I grew up, there were a bunch of musicians in my high school, and most of them were really good, and I was not very, I mean, you know, I wasn't one of those people who, I don't know if there are people like this, I was sold the idea that there are people who pick up a guitar and are unbelievable right off the bat, and I don't know if that's the case or not. I'm kind of yet to meet anyone who just does that without working hard at it, but I was under the impression that that should happen to me, and it obviously didn't. So I grew up playing in groups. People would jam all the time back in Mountain Brook, and I would go to jam sessions, and we would, you know, I mean, that was what it was about, was you would get high and play music with people, and all these guys would be real good, and I'd get played out of the building. And that was, you know, I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, they'd be, like, calling out crazy jazz chords, and I'd be like, I don't even know what that is. And I'd just get these looks, like, if you're not going to play, you know, pass the guitar on to someone else. And I normally did, because I was more interested in getting high anyway. But, that was how I kind of got into it, was it was kind of this whole party, play music, that was kind of what you did. And I don't know, I mean, after a while, it's kind of like sad when I think about it now, because like music and drugs to me at some point were completely like inseparable. Like that was pretty much part of it, which was one of the big things about getting sober for me. It was like, I was really freaked out that I was like not going to enjoy playing anymore. Because I was playing in a group of guys, and that was like our thing. We would play gigs, and it was a party, because, you know, like in Tuscaloosa, and I'm sure in many other places, part of your pay is a bar tab. You know, they give you whatever your, you know, the small amount of money that they pay you to be the entertainment for the night, and then they pay you in beer, essentially, right, or liquor or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, that was, you know, and it was like pretty ugly pretty fast for me. I mean, like, I don't know, you know, I haven't talked to any of the bar owners in Tuscaloosa, and it's not really, I mean, I'll play a gig every now and then here, but it's not really something I do a lot anymore. But I don't know what my reputation was, but I definitely know that there was a point where every single time we were playing music, I was by far just, you know, I was loaded all the time, and it wasn't good. I mean, you know, I wasn't playing anything that people really should have had to listen to. So I don't know. But that was exciting for me, you know, getting sober and realizing that, I mean, if anything, music has become more of a part, you know, today music is my life. Whereas before it was kind of like music was the thing that was kind of keeping me going. Despite the fact that everything else in my life was falling apart. I was kind of like holding on to this idea that I was going to at least still have music. And then when I got sober, I was really worried that, you know, that wasn't going to be able to be a part of my life anymore. And what I found is really I've been able to explore a completely different level of that than I thought I'd ever be able to. Because, you know, getting back into school and getting to study under the people that I've gotten to study under, I've got a composition teacher, Amir Zahari, who is he's from Atlanta, and he's been a professor at the university for a couple of years. And I mean, he's just, you know, the guy's just unbelievable. So he's one of those people that you talk to and you're like, oh my gosh, you got to have like 50 IQ points on me. You're using words that I've just absolutely never heard. And you hear his music and you're like, unbelievable, you know, this is incredible. But I mean, you know, and the people I've gotten to play with in the School of Music here, I mean, it's just been, you know, it's one of those things that I think you hear a lot of people say in recovery is that thing of, you know, if you had told me to list the things before I got in here that I would have wanted out of it, it would have never matched up to what's actually happened. And I would definitely say that's true for the music side of things for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so important. A lot of people are scared that they'll lose their muse if they get that the drugs and alcohol and the music are so tied together. But yeah, it's definitely been my experience as well. Not just artistically, but also just like being able to follow through and show up places on time and stuff like that. You're doing school and music and recovery, and I'm curious about how you manage to balance those, because that's all a lot.
Right.
How is it taking you? What's the process been like, or what have you learned in terms of being able to figure out that balance of academics, recovery, and music? Now, I know music is academics for you, but just the whole school life, recovery, and music.
My experience is that, you know, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but some of the like things that I've learned early on is like, essentially, you know, get up. For me, it's like getting up early and getting the stuff done that I want to do every day to better myself as a musician, you know, which means that I get up, you know, at least 2 or 3 hours before my class, whenever my class is, and I'll try to do the stuff that I kind of call if I was a drummer, it'd be rudiments. I mean, I guess it is for guitar too, but like just like running scales and all the stuff that I do every single day, basically. And I'll try to knock that out before I have anything important, I guess, to do that day, just because once that's done, I could do nothing else basically on the guitar that day if it were to happen, you know, if for whatever reason my schedule gets flooded and I had no chance of even getting to play music again the rest of the day. And I would have at least done the bare minimum for me. So then I can go about my day. And like school for me, you know, when I first got back in school, I was, it had been, I don't know how many years since I'd actually like tried in school. And, you know, after a while, I was like, oh, I get why people, like, get stressed out about this, because it's actually kind of hard. And, and, you know, like, when you're actually doing the stuff that you're supposed to do, it's kind of hard. But I, you know, one of the things was, and it was funny, I was, like, learning from these, because I, you know, I was a few years older than the kids in these classes that I was taking, and I started kind of picking up on what they were doing. And for me, it's just, I mean, you know, I just try to stay on top of stuff and not get behind, because I feel like once I get behind, I don't know if, you know, other people are like this, but when I get behind, I have a tendency to just kind of like let it go and not think about it for a while. And then I'm like really behind. So my main thing is, you know, I do that stuff in the morning that I talked about, and then I go to class and I make sure that, like, you know, I've read before the class and done pretty much all the work that I can possibly do for that class on my end, so that when the time comes to, you know, study or write a paper or whatever the case may be, it's not, it doesn't require me spending the hours and hours and hours studying or writing the paper, or I mean, like finding the material for the paper, whereas I already, like, you know, I've already done the work in smaller segments on, you know, every day, and now it's time to do this, and I know this stuff, and I can just kind of go into it. You know, I mean, I still study, but I don't have to study. I don't have to do, like, the 16-hour cram session that would totally throw off, you know, the rest of my week if I had to do that in one day. And then as far as recovery goes, it's, you know, I go through various phases of being able to, you know, I'm not a consistent guy at all with this stuff, but, you know, I try to make, at the bare minimum, I try to make 3 meetings a week. And there's a great place here that I can go to. And then the greatest thing, I think, is there's a great clubhouse here, I guess I should say, for meetings. But the biggest thing is, you know, with this collegiate recovery community here on campus, I've got, there's 20 other guys that are my age that are in recovery down here in school in the same situation as me. And those are, you know, those are my best friends. And so for me, you know, I live with 3 guys that are all in the program, and they're all my age. And it's like one of those things where we're all kind of, I mean, recovery is a conversation almost once a day, you know, in this house, and we're all talking about it, and we're all kind of, you know, we're all trying to live it. So it's more than just hitting a meeting, and it's more than just having the opportunity to work with, which there's plenty of opportunities to work with people here, because there's a lot of people that get arrested and end up, you know, down in meetings and stuff with their sheets getting signed or whatever, just it being a college campus and everything. And,
right.
And so, I don't know, Tuscaloosa just kind of lends itself to being able to pull it all off, you know, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, and I'm not, that makes it sound like it's, you know, like this, like, perfect picture. And sometimes it gets really crazy. And sometimes I, you know, miss something or screw something up. And then I'm kind of like, you know, I have to deal with that for a couple days. But that's kind of my routine is knock the stuff that I, you know, that I just feel like I have to do out early in the morning. Try to stay on top of it in school, and then with recovery, just, you know, do the things that I absolutely have to do to stay sober, which, you know, like I said, hit the meetings, work with sponsees, and try to just stay in touch with the community. I mean, you know, the fellowshipping for me has been, you know, one of the biggest things here, because I've, you know, the only friends that I had in Tuscaloosa before recovery were, you know, it wasn't the group of people. If I was hanging out with them today, it would not be fun. You know, I'd be miserable. So.
Yeah. Well, that seems like it's a great situation. I mean, that you have it right there. I mean, you can go out and get meetings off campus, but that is kind of like infused into the culture. Is a beautiful thing. Have you had any issues being a sober musician? Have you had any places where anyone gave you a hard time, or anyone was like, felt like, have you had any issues as a musician who doesn't drink or do drugs?
I thought it was funny, like, because right when I got sober, I was playing in this, I was playing in a band that I played in for a couple of years here, and I guess people were just so used to, because, like, we, you know, my little brother goes to school here, and so a bunch of his friends were big fans of ours, and they would come out to our shows and stuff. And, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, the party. So, you know, we'd get off stage to take a set break, and we'd get drunk together and then go back on stage. And so I guess, like, coming back and continuing to play, because I probably continued to play gigs here with that group for probably another, like, 9 months or when I got back. And it was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of funny, because I would, like, be playing and be, like, the end of a song, and I'd look down, and there'd be, like, three, like, shots of whatever sitting at my feet that someone would have brought me, and I would just always be like, you know, y'all can, I'd give them out to the band, I'd be like, y'all can have these, you know, and I would just be like, because, you know, I guess, like, drunk people, you know, it's impossible to try to explain to them what's going on with you, so, like, I don't know, I just kind of deflected for the longest time. I was just like, I would kind of laugh it off, and when you'd have that really drunk guy come up to you and be like, let me get you a drink, you know, I'd always be like, I don't know. It was easy for me to be like, no thanks, you know, at that time. And, but yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where people just didn't really understand at first, and it took a while. I think it also took a while for people to understand that I was being serious about it, because I don't think anyone really believed that I was actually going to, like, stay sober, you know? And I mean that, I mean, and I don't blame them, you know, I don't know why they would have thought that, in the first couple months. So I think part of it was just friends thinking that I was, you know, soon enough I would be drinking with them again or whatever. And slowly, as it, you know, never happened, they all kind of know where I am now. And especially with, you know, my little brother's friends and stuff, you know, having hung out with them now, and my friends having hung out with them and kind of explained to them my situation, none of them have, I haven't had anyone give me a hard time about it. You know, they've all been extremely supportive once they've kind of wrapped their brain around what it means to be sober and why it is that I can't, you know, go out and have a beer with them, because, like, how that ends. You know, once they understood that, they've all been super cool about it, so...
Bear with me a second, I'm just catching up to you. What if they wrap their minds about what it means to be around, what it means to be sober? Okay, cool. All right, my friend. So I have just two more questions for you, and then we'll see if you have any questions that you would, or issues you wanted to address. What are your musical goals?
Well, that's a good question and a hard question, I guess. I don't really know. I mean, like, I'd like... just right now, my goal is that one day, that is what I can do. That's what I can focus literally all of my professional attention to. I want to be able to pay my bills with music. And the only reason I say that is because I want to be able to do what I love more than anything else, and be able to put as much energy in it as I know that I can, but am not really able to, I guess, for various reasons. You know, I wasn't one of those kids who grew up in a family where they were like, you know, play the piano and stuff. So, like, I missed out on years of what a lot of other kids that I play music with got, which was, you know, just being a kid and having no problems and coming home and working all day on your instrument.
Right.
And so, you know, I'd give anything to have that time.
Let's listen to a little bit of Elliott's award-winning song, which is called Awake. You can listen to the whole song at Elliott's SoundCloud page. You go to soundcloud.com, Elliott Calloway. That's Elliott with two T's, and Calloway, C-A-L-L-A-W-A-Y. This is a song called Awake.
Pleasure. Is there anything that you wish I had asked you about that I didn't ask you about, or you think is important that I missed? Or you'd want to tell another student who was wanted to be sober and a college student and an artist?
I mean, I guess just like, let's see, gosh, I guess just kind of don't get. It's basically what you said, but about the professional career, but I would just apply it to college, and that don't let what everyone else is doing kind of like convolute your idea of what it means to be working hard, because it's easy for people to look at art as you just kind of like having fun and doing your little art thing, and that's what I found is, you know, you get a lot of quirky looks when you tell someone you've been practicing for hours the guitar, and they're kind of like, what? That's your degree, and they're, you know, over there getting a business degree or whatever. So you know, I guess just, you know, hard work is hard work, and doesn't have to fit into anyone else's mold.
Thank you for once again tuning in to Wings Over Water, Creativity and Recovery on City of Angels Recovery Radio. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, let them know. We have shows every single day of the week. There's a comedy show, there's shows for women, there's shows for guys, there's shows on emotional sobriety, there's shows for parents of addicts. There's all different kinds of shows on this station. So please let other people know about it. And my name is Kathy Moser. It's been a pleasure being with you. And we're going to go out with a little bit of more of that tune by Elliott Calloway, his song called Awake. Again, you can find him on SoundCloud, Elliott Calloway, C-A-L-L-A-W-A-Y. Have a great creative week in recovery.
Today.